I'm Catherine Orchard.
And I'm Hannah van der Vesthuizen.
And we are
the Fat Boy Podcast.
Welcome to the Fuckboy Podcast.
The podcast where we delve into some of the most iconic, reprehensible and shaggable fuckboys, fuckgirls and just general fuckfolk.
No one is safe.
Exactly. Who grace our screens, novels and history books and ask why.
On this episode, Hannah is taking us on a journey to New York, to LA, and one day maybe Paris. For the hit Netflix series, You.
And of course, we will be hearing your best listener stories at the end of the episode.
So we were just discussing how much TV we've all been watching, and I've got to be honest and say,
I feel like I've been lavishing because I've watched so much of The L Word. I am so neat. I've already, these two have already heard me go on and on about how in love I am with the entire cast of The L Word, original and Gen Q.
I was yesterday did some furious Googling myself to see who was in relationships with.
And who's gay from The L Word?
Well, yeah, who's gay?
Yeah. Was what not I was enough of them at. To TBH?
Not enough. Also, I was like, yeah, I knew. Which I'm not sure I did, but.
I did.
But then in the other situation, if there was like a gay person playing straight on telly and somebody was like, well, I knew they were gay, I'd be like, how dare you? So I was like trying not to do that myself.
I think it's more to do with the fact that I have enough engagement with pop culture that there's a reason, like queer pop culture, that there's a reason why I knew some of those L Word celebrities and why I didn't know some of them. I was like, obviously the gays have gone even more wild for the people in real life having like lovely, meaningful, openly queer relationships that they've become more famous within that community.
Yeah.
So I feel like I did know.
Anyway, carry on what you were saying. I was just going to go off on a full L Word tangent.
To see it,
we can talk about that in our own time.
Well, what I was going to say was the main reason why I brought it up was because I've been so romantically entwined with these characters in my own head for the past 7 days of isolation. Kath was saying before that you've been romantically entwined with someone in your head from.
Oh, yeah. Who have I been romantically entwined with in fantasy this week? Well, so I always have like, well, I don't always, but I always have someone in fantasy who I'm in love with and occasionally have someone in real life who I very occasionally.
Very.
But like that's so phenomenally rare.
Yeah. I'm with you. She has needs a real life relationship.
Exactly.
When you have the ones in your brain. Physical touch. I don't know her.
Yeah. Physical touch we've never met. They're not real. I do think I'm still quite hungover from my like deep love of Vi from Arcane.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. So I still think like a lot of that is weighing heavy on my heart.
Yeah.
Because they're a cartoon.
This is true.
Right?
But it's almost worse because they are, in any way, you can manipulate them into being what your heart desires.
Yeah, which is exactly what they gave me on screen.
Yeah.
That is all I want.
Yeah. So what's he like? Tell me about him. Because I've not watched Arcane.
Oh, she is
salt.
A woof.
A woof.
There's like, it's this amazing fantasy sci-fi drama, and there's like an underworld basically, and Vi is like a kid who grows up in this underworld, both their parents pass away, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, does Katie Leung voice her?
Yeah, no, Katie Leung voices Caitlin, who is...
Oh, does she?
Yeah, who is there's like a then little... romantically entwined
oh, cool.
yeah.
with Vi. So Vi is played by Hayley... Is it Stein or Stein?
Steinfeld?
Yeah.
Steinfeld, yeah.
Is she?
Yeah.
I did not realise.
realise that.
Which suddenly I think Hayley Steinfeld is
Hannah's less
wonderful.
Interested.
Hayley Steinfeld repeatedly
plays gay people.
Repeatedly plays gay people.
I know.
Yes.
That's so interesting.
She is gay in Dickinson,
no.
right?
Yeah. Yes. But not in real life, it seems. But she's young. Yeah, she's young.
And also, we don't know.
She hasn't met us yet.
Exactly.
You never know. Like, this is the thing.
You never know.
So many people can be queer, but they don't owe it to us to tell us.
Exactly. But we're starting the rumour now.
I assume everyone is queer unless I'm told otherwise, which maybe is not the right way around. But
no, I'm exactly the same.
Yeah. But even when people are like, no, I'm straight, I'm like, you seem really insistent upon that.
Yeah. It's like, I've seen your wardrobe.
I saw that flannel shirt. You're kidding no one, baby.
I heard you singing that musical number.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Wicked? Sure. So yeah, that's probably my love. Who's your fictional love right now?
Well, we know Hannah's.
Yeah.
No, I don't know who in the L world? I keep saying world.
Okay, so obviously from the original, it is Shane, Kat Moaning. She came...
Yeah, Shane, Gwyneth Paltrow's cousin.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Oh, so, so, so fit.
So hot.
So disrespectful in the way that they have their relationships, and I want them to destroy my heart in every way.
Yes.
And then from L Word, Jen Q, the person who plays Finley, her name is Jacqueline, I can't remember her second name now. She owns me. She can do whatever she wants to me. That's allowed. So yeah, completely obsessed with the two of them at the moment, which is highly unfortunate because they're both engaged or married.
Such a shame. Gutting.
I feel like
at least they're real.
I'm consuming content where none of the characters are that likable,
right?
Or so like I'm watching Dope Sick right now, which is amazing. Absolutely incredible.
Incredible show.
I'm going to watch it.
It's not that they're not lovable. I mean, they're totally lovable. It's just that they're not... The point of them is not to be...
Yeah, totally.
Attractive or, like, sexually desirable. Because this is an amazing series about OxyContin and the opioid epidemic that happened in America. I mean, maybe Caitlin Dever in that. She's just... Is that her name? Diva or Diva? Caitlin.
Oh, really?
She's in Booksmart.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Love that.
She is amazing.
She's really
incredible.
Really good actor.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I wouldn't say she's my fictional crush.
No.
More like your creative crush.
Yeah.
Like, wow, how amazing they are.
Exactly. And it's more that it gets confusing, doesn't it? Like, do I want to fuck them or do I want to be them?
Yeah.
But and I think you know
I definitely don't want to be her in Dope Sick.
No, but as in like the actor,
not in a good place.
Yeah, her career,
like,
wow.
And you do get that thing where sometimes you'll just be like, oh, I have like a little crush on you, I just like you, I'm like really enjoying watching you on telly. And then you'll have the people where you're like, like my body is on fire with my desire for you.
It's wild, isn't it?
Uncontrollable. It's the same as like when I remember reading Twilight and my body feeling alive with my lust for him.
Oh my
but
God,
also guys, this couldn't be more relevant because today we are covering someone who drives women and I guess some men and
there'll
and
be men out
absolutely
there.
Wild.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For his fictional character, Joe Goldberg.
Oh,
firstly,
my God.
Out of 10, instantly quick fire. What's your attraction level to Joe?
Oh, Joe.
Yeah.
Maybe like a 3? 2?
Ooh. Oh, mine's got to be higher than that. But I've only seen season 1.
Okay.
And it was years ago. But maybe I'm confusing it with Penn. Let's say 5.
Okay, 5. I would say that you two are the exception to the rule. A lot of people are absolutely obsessed with him, obsessed with this character.
What's yours out of 10?
Mine is also really low, but I feel like that... the appeal that he holds for me, for most people, is not something that I personally find appealing. But it's like a phenomenon. It's so wild.
There are some pretty scary tweets out there, my peeps.
Yeah. Really, really terrifying.
My peeps.
So, Kath, you've seen one series. Hanako, you've seen the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. And did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's so over the top. It's so camp. It's so delicious. It's so ridiculous.
There's
I love
books.
It.
There's
it's really...
Like,
Yeah, it's also like a wonderful commentary on the type of people that we find in our society and you know, what romantic tropes. It's basically perfect content for what we do on this podcast. It's a mad cultural phenomenon. And even Penn Badgley, who...
Oh, yeah.
Penn Badgley... I will say his name correctly.
I will.
I will. I always get it wrong, but I will get it right. Even he was astounded. Like you say, there's been so many wild tweets about people's attraction towards this absolute, spoiler alert, murderer and psychopath, that he responds in really comical fashions. And, you know, we'll put that on Instagram so that people can see.
Yeah.
But he actually said himself to Entertainment Weekly, "Joe is not looking for true love. He is not actually a person who just needs somebody to love him. He is a murderer. He is a sociopath. He is abusive. He is delusional. And he is self-obsessed. You can't fool yourself into thinking that he just needs somebody who's right for him. Nobody is right for him." And yet there are swathes of women who are ready to throw themselves into that glass torture box in the hope that they'll be the next object of his obsession. Why? And that's what we're going to discuss today.
Oh, I cannot wait.
So we had him on our list as our ultimate nice guy in episode one when we were listing our all the different archetypes that we have of fuckboys. So it's definitely worth going back and listening to that. But what is a nice guy? What is Joe? Who is he? We'll be tucking into all of that right after this. Okay, so we're covering you, and the lead character of the show is none other than our ultimate nice guy, Joe Goldberg. So, what is a nice guy, you may be wondering? So, back when we wrote this podcast as a book, we wrote up a definition for some ways to spot a nice guy and who a nice guy is. So, if you two would do me the pleasure.
This is the definition of a nice guy. This strain of fuckboy is nice. He doesn't act like he's being marched down the aisle for a shotgun wedding when you ask to go for a coffee, and he sends you woke articles on intersectional environmentalism. But if anything, he comes off too nice. That's because nice guys align themselves with being good dudes at best, and at worst, nice guys who finish last. What do Ross Geller, Dan Humphries, and Aaron Samuels all have in common? They justify their terrible behaviour toward women by playing the nice guy. For example, setting up an abusive alter ego to publicly trash your love interest on the internet for years, just so you can get noticed enough for them to fall in love with you as you are meant to be. XOXO, red flag.
Okay, so how to spot a nice guy? Overly enthusiastic about cunnilingus.
Naturally.
Virtue signalling. Their favourite sport. Virtue signalling, probably using a culturally appropriative ancient smoke ritual. A group of friends who allows them to believe they have no flaws.
Not
you're
one.
Such a nice guy. Either a history that doesn't match his current personality, aka a good wholesome relationship guy who slept with a third of Leeds University, and or all his past failed relationships paint him as a wounded hero.
That's a classic.
Yeah, these are all classics. These are...
Yeah, those are classic tropes. And
we all know them.
We know this person. Have either of you dated a nice guy?
I've probably encountered one. I don't think I've dated one.
I don't think I have either.
I have. I really have. Mine is so bad that, like, I think my depth of knowledge with this particular strain of fuckboy is so, run so deep, because I dated this person a number of times, actually, and on one occasion he broke up with me for someone else, but, like, honestly got me on such a roll with it that he was being like, I was like, yeah, this is amazing for you. I'm so thrilled for you. Like, I'm so excited for your life and for this relationship that you're going to have with this other girl. Like, I'm just so thrilled for you. And he was like, oh, you're such a legend, mate. You're such a legend. We've been dating like 3 months.
He said, you're such a legend.
He called
mate.
Me a legend. Yeah, he was like, you're such a legend, mate. And I was like, I am. Oh, no.
I? Aren't I such a legend? And I felt like, oh, great. Look, I'm not even hurting.
You felt like a legend.
I felt like a legend. And then the next day I was like, I feel so bad about myself. I'm so angry. I think that's the thing, because their intention, his intention was to not hurt my feelings, to like get me on side, see that it's the right thing for him and, you know. But in turn, like it hurt my feelings much more than just being like, I don't want to be with you. And then I'd be like, okay, well, fine. I don't want to be with you either.
It feels like he was trying to make himself feel better about the situation rather than prioritizing how you might be feeling.
That's true. And that's not actually very nice.
No, it's not.
It's very selfish and manipulative.
Mm-hmm. And weird.
And weird.
And weird. And you suck. And we hate you. Never talk to us again.
Don't talk to me again.
You are not a legend. Let that be said.
Yeah. Let that be written on the grave. Not a legend.
Okay, so back to you, the TV show. Just for those of you who have been living under a rock or aren't romantically attracted to murderers, You is a Netflix original based on Caroline Koepner's book of the same name. It takes the question, what would you do for love, and gives us a very twisted answer. It follows the story of a young man, Joe Goldberg, a young bookstore clerk who is unrealistically handsome, devilishly charming, and obviously murderously obsessive. There are now three seasons, over which he goes to drastic measures to insert himself into the lives of those he has become entranced by, all of which happen to be really, really hot women. And look, so haven't we all been there?
Super hot. You know, I auditioned for the lead girl in the first series, and I know you were wondering why I didn't get cast as Beck.
That's what we're wondering.
As Beck.
Well, why didn't you have a go?
I was just too talented. They couldn't handle me.
I was just too good. Like, I just intimidated all the producers. They were like,
she'll be too likable, and we'll not have anyone on our side.
She's too hot. It's not realistic.
Have I told you about my weird Victoria Pedretti thing as well?
Oh my God, no. I love her.
Okay, so Victoria Pedretti, you haven't seen the two latter series, but she plays Love Quinn, who I will delve into shortly. I used to live with a partner of mine, and she went to Carnegie Mellon with my ex-partner, and she was going to Paris to go and study at Le Coq. Of course she was, to go and do clowning.
Right. Of course. She's so cool.
And so she stayed in our house for two nights, and she was really lovely. And a bit weird. But I mean, like, in kind of like a, like, indefinitely a very, like, fun way. I remember just being like, this person is sleeping on my floor who is going to learn to be a clown. Sure. And then she ended up being fucking Victoria Pedretti, one of the best actors I've seen on telly in bloody ages. She's so good.
Love that.
I think you have to be a few sandwiches short of a picnic to actively want to do clowning. Yeah. Do you remember did clowning at Lambda?
I loved clowning.
Did you? Well, yeah, I mean, you are a few sandwiches short of a picnic.
It's true.
I get embarrassed super easily.
I mean, I cried in a lot of lessons. Don't get me wrong. I was so mortified. But I did enjoy it in the end.
But yeah. It's a small little world.
You push through, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I won't also get into if you can do clowning, you've really
you can do
like,
fucking
you do
anything.
And you also, like, anything. You've got no what's the word I'm looking for?
Inhibitions,
and that makes for a wonderful actor, which is why Victoria is so bloody good.
So fucking good.
So, Kath, I'm really sorry, but there are going to be a bunch of spoilers in here for season two and three.
Oh, I'm okay with it.
But look, it was inevitable.
I ruined Succession for you.
Yeah, this is true. So, if you haven't seen You, the TV show, then I recommend you go watch it. Otherwise, I'm going to do a very quick rapid fire of all of the things that Joe does that are just, it's red flag city, baby. So in season one, it opens with Joe meeting an aspiring writer and blonde bombshell, Gwenifer Beck, who could have only been hotter had she been played by Hannah Coe-Footman. Instantly, he starts furiously Googling her and finds her job info, address, and Instagram. So he starts following her.
We've all been there, though.
Yeah. He starts following her.
Literally. He breaks into her apartment, he steals her underwear, and he taps her
phone. That's when it gets too much.
Yeah, and he taps her phone, all before simply asking her out. So throughout the season, he does a number of utterly terrifying things, which he somehow justifies as being in her best interest, right? So, for example, he kills her, to be fair, scumbag boyfriend. He kills her, to be fair, manipulative best friend. He masturbates over her mid-stalk. No, to be fair, no redeeming qualities there.
No.
And he also goes to her therapist under an alias because he thinks she's sleeping with him, which she isn't at the time. but he justifies doing all of these things because he is convinced that these unworthy distractions were only keeping Beck from her career from taking off and from the two of them finding happiness together. However, it all culminates in Jo killing Beck herself when she finds his creepy box of Mentos and underwear and teeth.
That was really scary.
So
that
all of that murder is so scary. All of that murder and for what? Not true love.
For what?
Clearly. For what?
Oh God, it's like abuse taken to like murder levels. It's really quite something.
It's terrifying.
And people like this guy.
Oh, they love this guy.
They love this guy.
And it only gets worse as well. In season 2 and 3, it revolves around another classic fitty, as we've said, Love Quinn, played by Victoria Pedretti.
What names? These names
are just
incred.
There is no explanation for why she is called Love, except for the fact that it sets up some brilliant puns, which I actually think is an excellent reason to name any of your characters.
It's an excellent reason. This is the only reason we need.
Yeah, honestly, do it in the name of puns. Do it for the pun. Again, there's a ton of murder from the off. He's fled to LA because another ex-girlfriend of his called Candace, who he tried to murder and bury alive just because he tried to dump her. She comes back and starts threatening him, which is fair. Yeah, so naturally he's doing his whole stalking and stabbing routine, firstly to steal someone's identity and then to protect himself from other people finding out his real identity. And there's a lot of gruesome scenes with missing fingers and meat grinders, but that did not turn my stomach anywhere near as much as his weird relationship with Love Quinn.
Are you specifically talking about the I wolf you bit?
Oh yeah. I mean, and I'm not talking about just the I wolf you. I'm not talking about him stealing underwear again, which he does relentlessly throughout the three series.
He loves
series.
The dirty panties.
Lock that panty sniffer up
famous,
for God's sake.
Famous thing that
just
people
go
love.
To Japan, go to those vending machines where you can get the dirty panties and be done with it.
Honestly, leave those poor women and their unsolicited stolen panties alone. So, when Love finds out about Joe's shady past, also known as, you know, a murder of one ex-girlfriend and an attempted murder of another ex-girlfriend, he says to Love, all my exes were crazy.
Oh my God, that's such an original line. Like, it's so clever of him to come up with something like that.
Wild.
He missed the bit that where he goes, so I murdered them. Because that makes it sound less viable.
I mean, to be fair, if someone was like, all my exes are crazy,
and so in turn I murdered them.
Well, no, even just the first part, I'd be running pretty quickly in the opposite
direction.
Yeah,
if someone says their exes are crazy, that's a huge red flag, right?
Right, and then when they go, and I killed them, you go,
You go, this has been so nice. This has been so nice. And like, I really like you, and I'm definitely going to call you, but I do need to go to the toilet, and I need to make a little phone call to the police.
I need to ask for Angela at the bar.
Go ask for Angie. Thank you.
Niche little reference.
But look, we got it. So he says, all my exes were crazy, but even crazier, Love believes him. And so they fall in wolf.
In love?
I guess. Yeah, they fall in wolf because even though her name is Love, she can't say I love you. So I'm sorry, it's just Red Flag City.
She sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, but anyway, well, she is.
Famously.
Because Joe, as he says in the show, damage attracts damage. And he ends up getting a taste of his own medicine when it transpires that Love is also a crazy psychopath who has killed one of her exes and who is more than willing to finish off Joe's unsuccessful attempted murder of Candace. But that oh my God, no, 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 that is too much for Joe. He can be a murderer. He can murder to protect people, but not no. her, not she.
No.
Not poor little vulnerable love who shouldn't be able to hurt
No.
Guy. Absolutely not. So obviously he goes to dispose of love, like he does with just about everyone who doesn't live up
No.
to his delusional imagined figments. But love is pregnant. And so in a remarkably off-brand decision, Joe is pro-life. And love and him move to the suburbs for season 3 to raise their child, where they spend the entire series slowly killing off the supporting cast members in a bid to keep things spicy and to not kill each other. You know, just the standard keeping the flame alive marriage
Oh
stuff.
My God, I love the trajectory of this series. Who Isn't would have stunning? Thought they'd be able to be like, we're going to have a series, it's going to absolutely pop off, series 1, guy's a murderer. Wow, shock. And then they're just like, they're taking you to the sub. I did not think that this series would have this
Saying
many legs.
Bonnie and Clyde on your
Wow,
yeah,
incredible.
In a big way. And it is, there's so much murder. It's actually a really brilliant series because Joe is yeah. like really fighting against all of the tropes that he's fallen into of like being obsessed with people, stalking them, murdering people. He's really like fighting against all of that in a new
way. He's trying
way.
To be a good father.
Yeah,
wow, Joe,
in season 3. So it's become very...
he's like taking layered. The whole nice guy persona
to
his soul. He's like,
but it's also
2.0.
It's a really wonderful like sort of political commentary within that series because there's so many insufferable characters that we see that litter the internet and you know the suburban sort of dream life, and he's a really like almost the audience, what the audience is thinking is his voiceover as well, which is just tricks you into being like, we're the same person. No, you're not.
Yeah.
He's a murderer.
yeah it's so clever.
Yeah. So he's obviously fighting against all of his natural murdery urges, but unfortunately it does still culminate in old bad habits, you know, lots of cheating, lots of creeping, lots of panty sniffing. And of course, Love Quinn ends up bleeding out on the kitchen floor. And then he burns her body. And he also
puts one of her fingers in a pie? Gets very Sweeney Todd at the end.
It's all, they
God's
love
sakes.
A meat grinder situation.
If you're gonna kill someone, just like don't
oh, no,
eat
it's
them.
His toe. Just don't he puts eat his them. Toe in the pie.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't eat flesh? That's just don't do it.
Cannibalism is not hot.
It's
guys.
Not on.
It's not cool.
I'm not okay not with it.
Yeah, and then he ends up stalking Tati Gabrielle all the way to Paris at the end of season 3, which, to be honest...
Fuck me, he's in Paris.
Could happen to the best
so
of us.
Excited to see Joe Goldberg on
in
the Champs-Élysées.
Paris. Yes, me too. So that is the summary of all of his terrible, terrible behaviour over 3 series. And this is, you know, horrific and obviously makes him a murderer.
What happens to
as
the baby?
Well.
Does he kill the baby?
Gets left on the doorstep of a nunnery, I think.
No, a gay couple.
Oh, a gay couple.
Oh, okay.
Of course,
better,
with a
better.
Gay.
Yeah. You have one.
You have. Here you go.
You have it.
Oh my God. Yeah. So wow. He's an ally, but also a murderer.
Yeah.
So you know pros and cons. Anyway.
Yeah.
So. We've established that Joe is a deranged murderer who justifies his killings through them supposedly being in the best interest of whoever his current object of obsession is. But what's so captivating about this show is it's a hyper-real commentary on the toxicity of romance movie plot points, where the consequences are quite literally deadly for the women who catch Joe's eye. And yet, despite the obvious commentary, the stark warnings and blatant red flags... we still at least root for Joe, if not lust after him.
Mm.
Why?
Mm.
Why do you think? I really want to hear what you guys think.
So I think because you're seeing everything through Joe's perspective, his VO, and a lot of the stuff that he says, I'd say the majority of the stuff that he says, apart from, you know, the killy murdery stuff, makes a lot of sense. It's relatable, it's humorous, it's ironic, and you are... you're on the side of Joe from the very beginning because you're seeing everything through his perspective. But personally, he kind of loses me when he starts murdering people. I don't find that attractive.
Me personally.
However, if you look at a female version of Joe, por exemple, Villanelle.
Yeah.
You're on side.
Who is also a murderer.
With a... you know, damaged history, past, abandonment issues, etc.
And you're not even as closely in her head as you are in Joe's.
No.
No, not at all. I am all hers. Mm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm head over heels for Villanelle. So I don't know why so many people find... Okay. I think maybe it's because in all of us, there is the potential to kill.
Mm.
These characters are doing the things that we have thought about but would never do. And I think there's something in that that makes them attractive to us.
Well, I guess it's so that thing if he's doing it in the name of true love, right? Like he's saying, I would go as far as to murder for you. I would do anything for you. It's not even just, I want to, you know, I'm so angry, I want to kill someone. It's like, it's done with this idea of I'm being a good person and doing the right thing.
Mm, I think that's okay.
Justified killing. Yeah.
But then there are also people who like want to marry serial killers.
Yeah. But then that's, do you not think they're quite often lust-driven endeavours? It's like people's obsession with, oh my God, what's that? Like the most famous?
Charles Manson.
Charles Manson and Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy, who people are obsessed with.
Yeah.
And like is being played by Zac Efron. And mm-hmm. people think is like this charming, like... the epitome of charm because they can be such a fucking awful person and still get women and get them into the van and blah, 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 blah.
And I think the show does it really well. Like Ted Bundy was a pretty aesthetically good looking guy who's afforded the privileges, loads of privileges in society, being like a man in the first place.
I think Bundy's a big theme for this
100%. And also it's so much of like, you know, why he gets away with our affection, but also why he literally gets away with murder. It's so clever how they're like, look, the murderers that get away with stuff are also the people who we're like societally conditioned to forgive.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like I've finally finished reading Dracula and it's undeniable that there's something very sexy about Dracula, even though he literally is a murderer.
And a monster.
Children.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a monster.
Edward Cullen, murderer.
There's a fine line between love and hate, fear and fantasy, right?
Yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah, very close on the spectrum. Yeah.
And also that thing of, you know, so many women want to live out really scary fantasies of theirs sexually because they know that they're safe. So I wonder if this is, again, it's that like obsession with murder true crime podcasts or documentaries where you're like, I can think about all of the things that actually keep me awake at night and are terrifying, but they're in this capacity that I can control.
Yeah, you can push yourself to the limit without being in real danger. And it's like, you know, someone might have a fantasy about being strangled at knife point and be turned on by that. But then the actuality of that happening, their feelings towards that would be very, very different.
Yeah.
So I think within the realms of fiction,
there's scope
and women have this freedom to have these fantasies because Joe Goldberg isn't real.
But it's also so interesting because I think what's so specific about this is it runs deeper than like, you know, like even like a Dracula fantasy or whatever. It's more along the lines of the Edward Cullen fantasy, which is like, I actually want to date him. I want to date this character. I want to date this person, someone who would go to extreme lengths like murder for me, even if it meant that it might end in my demise and a few stabs, you know? Mm. And that's what's so... I think what the difference is like this idea of them having a really difficult, traumatic past that makes us go, oh, bless. They just need the right gal. They just need the right partner.
I can fix you. I can fix you.
And honestly, we've seen this so much in media, right?
It's like the ultimate thing of validation from men. The ultimate validation from a man is making a murderer not a murderer anymore. Like we're taught as... you know, women, like female presenting.
Taming the beast.
Yeah, you know, that your validation comes from men and that your worth comes from the men around you and how much they value you.
And it's such a sliding spectrum, right? Like, because you can have, like, James Bond, Edward Cullen, Joe Goldberg, like, murderers, and then you can also have, oh, I don't know, like Aaron Samuels in Mean Girls or
right whatever. Within the nice guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where they're doing these really terrible things, but because they've got like a really rough past, like
or because their agenda is right.
Yeah. And I think it's just that thing of being like, oh, I feel like you can't. They justify all of this terrible behavior because they've decided it's in the name of this greater good, whether that be like, you know, MI6 for Bond or hot women for Joe. They're like doing it because they think it is the right, nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Rather than like this Dracula pure lust of being like, I actually just kind of want you to chop my head off. And I think that's kind of fair. Mm.
Yeah, which well, also, he's like trying to turn everyone immortal. Like give them the gift of immortality and of this life and like...
Well, it's like a murderer with a moral compass is a huge turn on.
Oh my god, Dexter! Did you guys ever watch Dexter? House people is a love similar that vibe. Shit. Like these dreadful
because there's
people.
That duality. There's that animal instinct, beast, bloody alpha thing going on, and then there's the caregiver, the protector, the nurturer, and when you combine that. It's high drama. People want that in their lives.
And I wonder if it also, the idea of you being the only person who can fix them, you being the only person who can fix them, if that makes one feel self-validated in being like, I am special because I... Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
So it weirdly, this trope, which definitely serves men or terrible nice guys, is actually been so warped that it's made us... female presenting or you know the other people who are attracted to them feel important for giving all their energy towards them, even though that is deluded. You can never change them. They are a murderer. They are a terrible person usually, and that's so unhelpful because I can't even imagine how much that's blurred into our own personal lives, right? Like someone's jealousy or controlling behavior being like, oh, you know, they just really love me, or like someone's cruel comments being like, they just know me and they just want the right thing for me and they're just trying to tell me what I should do and what's in my best interest.
And I think danger can also be really addictive.
Oh god, yeah, definitely,
because it gives you a high in the way that, you know, like really it triggers the stress hormones and it fills you with adrenaline, and that can be addictive, that feeling.
Yeah. I remember having this real, like, fantasy for a while of being like, oh, the idea of just, like, strangers who are potentially really dangerous. Luckily, I didn't follow through with this because I could be dead by now. But it was after watching loads of murder documentaries, and I spoke at length to my housemate at the time, Flossie, about it. Because I was like, this is so funny how deluded this like fantasy of mine has become, that I've just been like, oh my god, that's so like wild, the risk factor of it. But it makes total sense. It's incredibly human, and this show really plays on that, and I think it acknowledges it as well, which is so clever.
Yeah, and so really the question is, why are a lot of us hardwired to be attracted to these types of characters,
to these types
of men, to these nice guys, but also to murderers? Like, what is it? Is it something that we're just born with? Is it something because we consume so much violent material because we're raised in a patriarchal society? Are we then attracted to these figures? Or I don't know what the answer is. I think it's really interesting.
I think it's more than one thing. It's different things for different people. For some people it's the fetish or the fantasy, and then for some people it's the potential to change. Like, I do think it's different for different people.
Yeah,
you know, he's not a two-dimensional character. I think that's probably why this series has such legs.
Yeah,
like there's
I find him
a lot.
Hilarious. I think he's so funny.
Yeah, he is. He Penn Badgley is hilarious. So funny.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
and it definitely
he's absolutely brilliant.
Is he married to one of the Kirk sisters? Yeah. So cool. What a cool couple.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know who the Kirk sisters are, they're like three sisters, son of a daughters, not sons, maybe sons, like a famous rock musician. And one of the sisters is in the head teacher in sex education. He's in Girls, played by Jemima Kirk. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize.
And they're
that.
Like these. Gorgeous.
And then Lola Kirk, who's an actress who's in Gone Girl.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's another one.
Yeah, I think there's the other one, and that's who he's married
Penn's wife.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Interesting. It's just amazing. Like, there are such obviously nice guy covers such a broad spectrum, but I guess it is someone who is doing loads of terrible things, but in the name of thinking they are doing the right thing. And that varies a lot in terms of how dangerous that can be.
Mm.
But we make excuses for them. I've definitely done that in the past. It's definitely done throughout this show. And as you say, it's like an epidemic of the moral corruption, I guess, that we sort of live in, that this show does so well, and that he is such an attractive figure to so many people, because everyone wants to fuck Joe Goldberg, at least a little bit.
Everyone wants to bang Joe Goldberg.
But then also, like, have no shame if you want to fuck Goldberg, you know?
Like,
just don't date him. Just don't date him. Definitely don't date Joe Goldberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe don't date him just in case he tries to kill you. That would be fun.
But just nice guys in general, we can steer clear of.
Listen to a story about it on Dipsy.
Yeah, exactly.
Listen to Dipsy, yeah.
But we did reach out because we knew there would be so many good examples of people who have dated nice guys. We are not alone. I am not alone in being called a legend. You are not alone in wanting to fuck Joe Goldberg. And we have so many of your gorgeous listener stories coming up. Okay, Kath, do you want to kick us off with one of our lovely listener stories?
So, this is the story, not me. I met this friend of a friend at a party. He was super shy, but goofy, smart, and genuinely kind when he approached me. So I agreed to go out with him. Also, our mutual friend kept telling me what a nice guy he was.
A classic.
We hit it off from our first date. From then, our interactions were full of deep, meaningful conversations about our personal challenges. He quickly met my friends, and soon I was the first person he'd call after a family emergency. We were both pretty vulnerable, and things were seemingly progressing really well. That was until one day. We'd been together about 2 months when we were in bed together, and he gets a Hinge notification.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, I obviously called him out on it, and he started thanking me. He said I was so amazing, that dating me had made him realise that he needed more confidence and experience with women, and thus needed to date a lot more different people. And because I was so understanding, he knew I would be cool with it. He didn't think to check, as I wasn't cool with it at all. He then justified it by saying he only fucked the others at their houses.
Oh my god!
Stop. And that he was so confused, as we'd been having such a nice time until now. Grim.
Not the behaviour of having a nice time, but sure.
Doesn't sound like a nice guy to me.
Sounds grim. So obviously I ended it, but have actually heard him referred to as a nice guy since. But don't waste my breath correcting people. I'm leaving that to karma.
Yes, absolutely. Don't waste any more energy on that terrible, terrible bloke.
Oh, God, what a grimbo.
Also, so wild, that logic. Imagine, I would join a cult, though, so I'd probably be like, yeah, sure. Yeah, you're right. You should.
Same. I'd be like, wow, this is just opening me up to so many new possibilities. Thank
you. Do
you
think there are two different types of nice guys where... there's one nice guy who really believes that his agenda is worthy and right. And then there is the other nice guy who just knows that his excuses and his like pretense of trying to be a good person will...
He doesn't actually mean them,
but he's just using them as a cover.
I think that's soft boy territory.
Yeah, that soft boy more. I think it's that thing of genuinely being like...
So you think nice guys genuinely believe
that they're being... nice. And even if they deep down sort of know that it would be less cruel to just be honest, I think they've still managed to convince themselves that they're doing the right thing.
The right thing.
Like not hurting your feelings or whatever.
I mean, I'm sure there's...
it's an array. Look, a fuckboy is a spectrum.
You're not one forever, right? Like, we have multiple love languages. We have multiple fuckboy categories for ourselves. But yeah, I do think that with a nice guy... the reason it's so
toxic,
awful,
scary. Yeah,
is because they think they're doing. Like,
they are
the right
deluded.
Thing. Yeah, they're deluded.
Deluded.
Wow. And then you're deluded.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You're like, maybe.
And
I'm
so,
wrong.
Do you think if it's the other way around, they're a bit of a narcissist, or they're a bit of a classic fuckboy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Intriguing.
And just like in their feelings, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, no, it's not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I have another one.
And another one.
Some weird guy was grinding on me at the club.
At the club.
And I was clearly uncomfortable. So a quote-unquote nice guy swooped in to save me and told the other guy I clearly didn't want it. I was pretty grateful initially. 10 minutes later, he proceeded to grab my waist and started grinding on me.
Oh my God.
I told him I had a boyfriend, and he said I didn't have a right to friendzone him after he saved me from the other dude, and that I was probably lying about my boyfriend.
Oh, good God.
Ew. I had to show him Facebook proof for him to drop it, and then he called me a bitch and walked away.
Oh, my gosh.
Why do women have to say that they have a boyfriend?
Well,
why?
No, we don't. We really don't.
That actually gives me pick me energy.
Yes.
That thing of being like, I'm such a nice guy, until you get rejected, and then they're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Bitch. Totally.
Yeah. You're a fucking bitch.
My God.
I hate that. Horrific. What a bad look.
Okay. Our final listener story.
Yes, okay, please. Hit us.
I was dating this guy for about 3 months. I did really like him, but it wasn't true love. Eventually, he ended it with me because he said he felt incredibly guilty for dragging me down. I tried to convince him otherwise, but it was a losing battle and we broke up. But there was always a lingering what if there for me. Several months later, I found out that he'd actually started dating a friend of mine with a suspicious timeline. A bit close, and realistically, there must have been a crossover. A while later, when I was drunk at a party, I asked him. He flat out denied it, but because I was however many pints deep, love that view, I kept pushing. He said he just didn't want to hurt my feelings with the truth, and that he was, in a sense, dragging me down because he was into someone else. It hurt my feelings, but definitely cured my chronic what-if-itis. Which is so true, because it is that thing of you're like, oh my God, did I miss out on something great? No, you weren't right for each other. And you knew that as well.
Bizarre, isn't it?
What a bin bloke.
We're like definitely so afraid of confrontation as a generation, as a people, as a society.
As a people.
Yeah.
Well, especially definitely. When the fear of confrontation is perhaps that you might get murdered, like in you.
Well, yeah. that's an understandable one.
That's valid.
That's so whatever the fuck you want. Like.
But yeah, you're right. We like twist ourselves into pretzels to try and like get out, like to stop ourselves from actually saying what we really mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saying the truth, being honest.
Yeah. It's
and sometimes it would be so much easier for ourselves and the other person to actually just tell them what really is going on rather than making these excuses.
Well, that was my New Year's resolution.
Okay, why are you attacking me?
No, Kath, do you not remember when we were talking about this? And I was like, that's my New Year's resolution.
Yeah,
start being more
totally.
Honest. Because, I feel attacked.
Yeah.
Start being more honest and start masturbating more.
Yeah. Two brilliant New Year's resolutions. 2022. Yeah, baby.
I'm okay with it. Yeah.
The year of...
Guys, are you proud that I can say masturbating?
I am proud of you.
Masturbating.
Wait. Masturbating.
Masturbating.
Lovely.
It's a 6 year. Lover's year.
Yeah. Great.
Yes, get it.
The lovers.
Get it, girls.
Peace. It is the year of honesty and orgasms.
Oh, yes. Love.
Links for all of our resources are in the show notes, so please do check them out.
Next week, we're going from the suburban slaughter of you to the skyscrapers of Singapore in Crazy Rich Asians.
In the meantime, you can help us by rating us and following the F-Boy podcast wherever you're listening.
And if you have your very own story, please don't be shy. Be sure to send them into our submissions at our website, www.fboypodcast.com, or slide into our DMs. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes. And you can find even more fuckboyery on Instagram and Twitter at fboypodcast.
Special thanks to our brilliant producers at Audio Boom Studios.
So, watch out, Nick, Eleanor, Michael, I mean, the list goes on. We're coming for you.